Yeah.
Hal?
Yeah, yeah. I got
Hal
my friend
did,
over coffee for President Coffee Cup.
How did you? How did you do a thesis on Naked Lunch?
I had a very open-minded advisor. And I had also taken a course or two of his, and he thought I was a sincere young scholar. And that if this was, it was American literature, and if this is what I wanted to do, it was all right with him. So he approved it. But I mean, Naked Lunch had only been out in the U.S. for 3 years now. But he kind of suspended, I mean, the greatness of Naked Lunch was immediately apparent, you know? I mean, it was like, so it wasn't like an untested entity, you know? Yeah, so that was how I got to do it. I said, this is what I really want to do. He said, well, you can do that. Nice kid. Leo Stover. He was a Thoreau scholar, so he knew a little bit about open-mindedness, you know.
I-T-O-O. I took CLA classes on ROC, rock, rock and roll.
I taught one. Yeah. Yeah, you know, they were shocked when I taught this class in the music department at Wayne State in Detroit. And the students were kind of shocked because when the history of rock and roll ended in 1959, you know. I went from, like, Africa to 1959, and I said, well, the rest of it, that was a different thing, you know. Wow. That was an outgrowth of rock and roll. Well, we're not going to have the Who and the Led Zeppelin. I said, no, no, no. That's rock. Rock and roll had to move from side to side, you know, like Chuck Berry and Little Richard. As we know.
B. L. U. Blues.
Yeah, blues.
We, P, E, people, are giving us their music collections from all
wow.
over the place. We, it's
for your
just,
library?
Yes. I mean, how many
have
how
mercy.
Many things do we have now?
We have
just a,
and in what
like
form? You mean actual records?
About 77,000 tracks so far.
Oh, but they're digital?
Yeah.
Oh, even
playlists.
Better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because you need another house to put records
Well, Mikey,
in.
Mikey makes them digital. Mikey yeah. makes them yeah. digital. But
yeah, I'm big into that now.
Yeah.
iTunes.
Yeah. Well, it's like Alexi is a handyman, and so whenever he gets a job, he'll end up telling them about Lover. And then they'll say, I have this like attic
full of records when I was a DJ at KPFA
in the 60s, you know, and so Mikey turns it into digital, so the person actually gets
right.
their record collection.
Well, then, you know, you can sell them.
We haven't gone to that step.
No,
yet.
I mean to fund your activities. Uh-huh. I did mine. That's what I did with my LPs.
EXJ, EXB, L, A, X. Oh, we have an ex Black Panther who has given us his record collection.
Oh, wow.
So it's like such a range
wow.
of people. Somebody who lived in Peru for a whole bunch of years
ooh.
Gave us his record collection. So it's, you know,
and you got
it's
it
amazing.
All.
It
what
all plays
it on
Lover.
iTunes?
No, I you know, record it on the computer and then slice it all up.
Oh.
And convert it to MP3s.
Yeah. But, I mean,
I want your M music.
Oh,
collection.
I got it right here. I'll give it to Mike before
I
leave. Sure, I got like 35 gigabytes of music.
Wow, you hear this,
including
Mikey?
All my own recordings and all my radio show archives. And,
oh my God. Are you listening
right
to this? Because Frank told John
Mikey.
That he wants his record collection. John has it right
I
here.
I got it all right here. Including all my radio, all the Radio Free Amsterdam shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, just put a line in. Yeah, good call.
A.
But they're all iTunes.
L.
Yeah, I can deal with that.
A L.
Well, let's do that before I go.
Yeah. A L.
Yeah, I'd be proud to have my music in your library.
Wow, that's great. What was the W
P P
U W H I
T E
White
Panther Party.
What was the White Panther
Party? Are we rolling?
Yeah, we've been going.
Oh, we've been going.
We don't. Mikey doesn't
oh,
tell us.
Oh, thank God. Wow. I was afraid I had to answer that question. What is civilization? First, I was working my way up to it. That was a big question.
We'll get back to that, right? Possibly.
Oh, okay, what was the White Panther Party?
Yes.
Well... the easy answer is it was a no easy answer. Okay,
you know
never
what the
mind.
Easy answer. H. Give us the hard answer.
No.
Give us the hard answer.
Well, I worked with a rock and roll band out of Detroit called the MC5, and we were moved, deeply moved by the Black Panther Party. We thought the Black Panther Party were the bravest people in America and also the smartest. And we also were very upset that they were being persecuted so wrongly. And we were being persecuted, but more for cultural crimes, like smoking marijuana mostly. But we felt like something had to be done to support the Black Panther Party in their struggle with the police and the government. So when we got our record contract with Elektra Records, and then we recorded our first album live in Detroit, a free concert at the Grandy Ballroom, two nights. And the next day, well, in our celebrations after making the record, we thought, you know, we don't really just want our record to go out there like another record by a rock band. We want to say something so that they know that we aren't just out to get rich and all that. We want to, we're concerned. Mostly about the Black Panther, by the war, all the stuff, you know, we're against all of that. And we were also proselytizing for what they called the hippie way of life at that time. We were deeply committed to this, so. So the day after we made our recording, then we sent out a press release, and we had this logo. Our artist, Gary Grimshaw, made this logo of a white panther. And we said, we are the White Panther Party. We've just formed, and blah, blah, blah. We support the Black Panther Party and its 10-point program, and we believe in total assault on the culture by any means necessary, including rock and roll, dope, and fucking in the streets. That was our slogan. And then we proceeded to, quote, organize our base. Our base was kids that came to our dances and concerts, and so we would have our banners, and we had literature that we'd pass out, and buttons. We had from the stage, we'd throw out a couple thousand White Panther buttons, and these kids would put them on, and then that would start a political process for them, starting with people who say, what does that button mean? You know, what are you wearing that for? And then they'd refer to their little White Panther literature, and they'd be able to interpret this for them, you know. So it was good. We'd give them, the ones that wanted to do something beyond just come to a dance, you know, we'd give them stacks of underground newspapers and tell them to sell these or pass them out at their school. And then that way, then they would get arrested, and, you know, and they get in trouble with the school, and then little pockets of trouble would erupt all through the suburbs of Detroit, you know, in Ann Arbor. And we were really out to, I don't want to say organize, because we didn't really do things. Later, I was a political organizer, so I know the difference. These were more dissemination of ideas and propaganda. Propaganda.
U, cultural. S, subversion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah. Well, we just hated the overworld, as we called it. You know, we were in the underworld, and we just hated the overworld. Much like today. Well, this is much worse now, but.
Yes.
And so we wanted to do anything that we could in our little feeble way as individuals and as musicians and artists, and we thought of ourselves as cultural revolutionaries. And we wanted to overthrow the existing culture and replace it, you know. So I guess that was revolutionary. We didn't really confront the larger issues at that particular time. But then half of our so-called leadership, meaning in our organization, the leadership was always the people who did the stuff. You know, they had the ideas and then they set up the mechanism to make it happen. Nobody really was hung up on being a leader, but we wanted to do things. So we ended up with like four of our main guys in prison. And
you?
Me, Pum Pumandan, Skip Taube, they were, Pum Pumandan was charged with an act of armed propaganda in Ann Arbor, which involved the placement of some little sticks of dynamite in front of a office that was rented by the CIA to recruit students at the University of Michigan, which was illegal at the time for them to do. So whoever did this act of armed propaganda, the result was when the fire forces came to put it out, everybody wanted to know, well, why did this particular place have this dynamite in front of it? And it turned out that it was the CIA. So that kind of pulled the covers off of them for a while. But we were charged with conspiracy to blow this up, and a couple of Pumpamana went underground. He was on the FBI 10 Most Wanted list. And he and two other guys got caught. They were transporting him to a secret location in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, along with his supplies of food and explosives. Big bags of brown rice and boxes of dynamite, you know. So anyway, the upshot of it was we were in prison. Most of us did, of the four of us, we did like 2.5 years each, most of us. So we had a lot of time in there to think and study and read revolutionary literature. And when we came out of prison in the early 70s.
R.I. Prison is the G.R. Great F. A C T O
factory of learning.
Factory of learning of revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what else have you got to do except read some stuff, you know? So I was reading the works of V.I. Lenin and Mao Zedong and Kwame Nkrumah and all these characters. and trying to figure out a way to apply these things to what we were trying to do in terms of displacing the United States government and Richard M. Nixon and his thugs. So when we came out in the early 70s, we actually were organizing.
You were a C A U S E, a cause.
Cause celebre.
Yeah. A cause celebre.
During the, when I was in prison, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I was trying to get out. So.
L. E. N. N. Lennon. W. Wrote. A song.
Oh,
John Lennon.
That's the other one, and not B.I.
Wrote a song. What song was that?
It's called John Sinclair. Yeah, he helped get me out of prison. And he came and to Ann Arbor and headlined a big benefit concert and rally on a Friday night. And on Monday, I was released on appeal bond after 2.5 years in prison. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. And it was particularly thrilling for us because our concept was that these rock and roll bands, rock bands, whatever you want to call them, you know, we're getting all this popularity and making money and controlling means of production and stuff like that. And we thought this was a good thing if it was used to serve the interests of the, what we called at the time, the broad masses of the people and not just themselves. And we thought, man, Lennon stepping outside of the world of pop music to say, get this guy out of prison, that was a good thing. When Bob Dylan did the same thing for George Jackson and Reuben Carter. At that time, we were kind of exhilarated because we thought this pointed toward the future, you know.
F-U-G, Fugs.
Yeah, Ed Sanders, my comrade and mentor. Yeah, the Fugs, the Underground Rolling Stones, they were called. Yeah. And their concept was the same, to put their music and their activity in the service of the movement, you know. But the sick thing was to know that after the mid-70s, all these millionaires in popular music, they don't do anything. Some of them give to the Democratic Party every 4 years.
Why? Why did that happen?
I don't know. I didn't have this experience, so I don't know how to explain it. Nobody's ever given me any money, so I've really never been able to.
Me? Me either?
You either, right. What do we know? If they put a bunch of money on the table, here we go buy some more equipment and a tower, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
I
don't know. I've never understood that. This is so much fun doing something like this.
Oh, that you're willing. Frank always says, I'm willing to sell out, but
no one's ever offered anything. Or anything. I don't know. In a way, it's a tribute to us because they know that I won't do any good, I guess. But I would enjoy somebody coming and saying, I'm going to give you $1 million if you'll just shut up. I said, I don't know.
Make it two.
Can I do a poetry reading, you know?
P-E.
I would negotiate something.
People, S, E, sell out for such small amounts of money.
Yeah, I know.
Frank always says.
Or even big amounts of money. But what's the difference? How much money do you have to have? That's what I don't understand about modern life. How much fucking money do they have to have?
Right.
They've traded everything else for money. They've sold everything else for money. They have no art. You know, they don't have no music. I mean, they've eliminated this shit from life, and you got the American Idol, you know. And, I begin to realize when you read in the papers about entertainment, all you read about is millionaires. Millionaire actors, millionaire sports figures, millionaire singers.
Before, we... We used to get listed in all the before we started lover. We thought there was no good music anymore. We had stopped listening to the radio because all the music was bad.
Oh, yeah. That's what
we thought,
I mean.
Well, they stopped being good music. And then we started Lover. We started getting
bags
and bags and bags of CDs from just people making
music.
Yeah,
there's an avalanche of it, but there's no outlet. They don't allow any outlets for it.
The good stuff.
Except
Lover,
we're making outlets.
Us. Right. Right.
But as far as the world of everyday entertainment and mass, you know, they just frozen everything out that has any intelligence or taste or anything, tradition. And instead you're listening to 50 Cent and, you know, people doing chants about, you know, just awful stuff. And the movies are awful and the television is awful. And I say if you can sit and watch television, you can buy the whole ticket. See, now I can't understand. How do they go for this guy Bush? You look at him, it's like David Duke, you know? You look at these guys, they're just little wise-ass, terrible people. You would never even have dinner with them,
right,
you know?
Right.
And yet these people buy everything. But then you watch television for 10 minutes, and you realize if you can watch that, you can buy anything that they tell you. I can't watch it. I just get disgusted. I want to break it. I mean, just the way they talk and the way they look and the graphics and everything, it's so repulsive. But people sit there and they can't live without it, you know? Uh-huh. I say to when I talk to kids, you know, and I say, what are we going to do in this world today? You guys had it so easy in the 60s. There were these clear-cut things to protest against, you know? And I say, well, turn off your television set. And they laugh. Ah, what a funny thing to say, you know? They've never considered this. And yet, I don't think they got any future if they don't turn it off. Because that's what they did. They surrounded people with this entertainment world. And it blocks out everything else. It's like having a helmet on. And you can't, nothing else is there. No, you can't. Even if you got it before them, you couldn't penetrate the screen. You know? I mean, they're paying for this war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and most people can't even tell you where they are. And they think Saddam Hussein blew up the Twin Towers. And they're just totally out of their minds.
But R A D I radicals don't understand, don't use the alternative, like, for example, like the cable access channel here in Berkeley. Nobody uses it.
I know.
So we're on like 6 hours
a
day.
I know, I remember that.
Yeah, nobody uses it. And we'll have radical group after radical group here and say, why don't you put some shows on Berkeley Public Access? They just don't do it.
I have 97 episodes of my radio show. Without a penny.
Right.
I mean, it's just one little thing, but I mean,
this
is what I want to do, and I do it.
You have to have money. Yeah. Even when we explain to them, we'll tell you exactly how to do it without any money.
Well, but
there's
no money. They think they have to have their own television show on Fox.
Right, right.
When you go to a poetry reading, you talk to the young poets afterwards. What they really want to have is their own television show, you know. But not like this.
Right. Not on cable.
They want to be a millionaire.
Right, right.
You know, I was having trouble understanding this, and I'm just starting to realize that everybody you read about is a millionaire.
Right.
And you don't ever read about Frank Moore or Sinclair or somebody like us.
Right.
Not only are we poor, but we're dangerous.
I. G. Oh, I got a S H O a show C A canceled. Oh, the one at Burnt Ramen. We had a new Burnt series. Ramen. Burnt Ramen is this underground club in Richmond. It's they've operated without a license for, I don't know, 5-6 years or something. Based on, they get relationships with the cops, with the local cops.
Ah, good for them.
And then they can do it.
Street level democracy.
Yeah, yeah. But apparently, what we just heard was it's a new chief of police or something.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's over.
They had a show 2 days before our show. Our show was supposed to be Thursday. Tuesday night, he had a show there, 250 people. The cop shows up and shuts it down. And it was like, what's different cops? You know, so in the interest of a long-term relationship, John just sent everybody home and tried to kind of get something going with these new cops with the hopes that we'll be able to do our show next month and we'll be able to keep going.
Yeah, you got to keep peddling. There will always be obstacles.
Right.
But I mean, isn't the thing of it that you have to have it in here? You have to have the drive. You have to.
Yes.
I used to call it the burning inside to make something happen. You know, you just have to be. I guess so disgusted. And
always. That's always
sad
true.
About the way it is, and you have to really believe that something has to be proposed that's different than that, and then you find the way to do it somehow.
And
of all the people that felt like this would go ahead and do something, it would be half, you know?
S, use everything. And use everything.
Yeah, whatever you can get your hands on. Yeah. Man. And it's so much fun. And there's all these people and they got all this money and they're angry and they're not having any fun. You can look at them and they aren't enjoying themselves and they don't know what's wrong.
They don't R E A really
realize
I like kicking up shit.
Yeah.
They don't realize that you like dealing with the obstacles that come
your
way.
Yeah,
we don't
fun.
See it as a bad thing.
No. You're solving problems.
Yeah.
You're just like a CEO.
Frank always gets pretty excited when he's got something to
go
at. Yeah. Yeah. When?
Because the more they try to freeze us out, the more of a challenge it is to figure out how to do something worthwhile.
When? The city council? And that, I think we might have mentioned this, that at the point the city council was trying to get rid of our cable access shows and pass.
Incidentally.
Frank Moore for president.
Frank Moore for president.
Frank Moore for president, 08.com. When they were trying to pass a law to get Frank's shows off of his own law. They were trying, they had the city attorney drafting
the Moore
a law.
Ordinance.
Yeah. So that and we spent like 8 months at city council meetings. Frank was in the paper constantly, the Berkeley papers constantly, letters to the editor, front page stories with pictures. We had the local television
good
news
publicity.
Here. We were the lead story one day about this. And
that's
what he kept saying. He'd wake up and I'd say, Frank, we're on the front page of the paper again.
He'd say, good.
All excited and stuff. He said, they have no idea how much fun I'm having with this.
Yep.
They think
yep.
this is a problem for us. F I R first V V O T, the first vote it actually passed to move us off.
No.
Yes, it passed. It was only, this is progressive Berkeley.
Come
Chris
on.
Worthington was the only city council person that voted in our behalf. Everybody else voted against us.
And so how did they become more enlightened?
Well, the ACLU came in.
Ah, yes.
And made a presentation at a city council meeting, and it just disappeared. Second vote never happened.
Yeah.
And Chris Worthington said that's how it goes.
See?
That's how they never say yes to you. They just never do the second vote.
Yeah, right.
But
it's like they never say they're sorry.
Right. No.
You ever notice that about Americans? They never say they're sorry.
Yeah.
They aren't because they aren't sorry, I guess.
If you had, when that happened, if you had been all defeated and thought this was a problem, that you were having problems with your show in Berkeley's at public access, it would have gone a whole different way. But because we got excited about
your,
it. Another defeat.
Fuck it. You know?
Yeah. Why do I bother? It never occurred to us. I.
Why do I bother? Because I'm having a ball.
I giggle.
Yeah.
Oh, at the city council meeting?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? During the city council meeting, Frank would be giggling.
Yeah.
Oh, when they... Well, there was a point where the city attorney changed the wording. They had come up with a certain wording, and then she shifted it so that it was the same wording that we had defeated
with the whole arts thing.
And so we knew they had nothing to stand on. And when she read it, this is like a serious moment, and everybody's seeing this. It's like, now we're in big trouble. Frank just starts laughing.
And everybody's looking over at it.
It's like, what is he laughing about?
Yeah, same old shit. Different flies.
Exactly. We knew we won at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, the exhilaration of beating them every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The point is, we're going to keep on going anyway.
Right.
That's how I look at it. They're not going to stop me.
How do you keep on going?
Give me an alternative. I don't know anything else. This is what I do, you know, for kicks. I love what I do, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, I'm never having enough money. That's the only thing I hate about it. But other than that, I'm having a ball. And I don't let that bother me too much. Because you don't really need that much, you know. I live a very Spartan lifestyle now.
You?
I'd like to spend more on drugs if I had it, but
you live in the H A P P happiest country. We just saw stats. Was it?
Oh, you mean Holland.
Was Holland the happiest country?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I saw that. They just came up with that on the news the other day.
Denmark was first.
With Denmark. Oh, that's what I thought it was. Yeah.
Holland is up there, too. I don't know what number. It's actually the Netherlands. Holland is the place.
Right.
Well, we call it Holland.
Right. Okay, so it's like in the top, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of dour duchies, but... But they aren't going to interfere in your life, you know. It's like they aren't armed.
Uh-huh.
And they don't even think like people do here. They don't even think like that. The idea of, you know, equalizing someone with a weapon, that's out of their... They don't think like that. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
You don't ever run... I mean, you know, sure, there's some hardcore lifetime criminals that are armed, and there's some... You know, angry white men, I'm sure, that are armed, but it isn't a factor. No, I used to hear when I lived in New Orleans, you know, I'll never forget a story in the paper. This place I used to go to, the Tremé Music Hall in my neighborhood. And the brass band was playing one night for dancing, everybody's in there, and the police raided the joint. And there was this clunk, clunk, clunk. And there were 37 pistols on the ground. But the guys had cast off the minute the police came in. There was about 55 people in the club. 37 of them were armed.
That's
just the way it is. In the ghetto, I mean, people are armed, you know. And then white people are armed for the opposite reason.
Where is the G? Oh. Oh. Good. Oh. Old.
Huh.
S D days when U D R O dropped J
joints. Yeah. Oh, there were bags of dope too, you know. They had both, you know. But man, that blew my mind. Jeez, you know everybody, you know a lot of people are armed, but I mean, you don't realize it. That it was more than half, you know. And Detroit's even worse, where I lived before that. So it took me a while to get used to it. And now you just realize they don't think like that. And then they might, it isn't like they're nuts about you getting high. A lot of them have a lot of opprobrium for people to get high. Remember, the Dutch Reformed Church came out of these people, you know. So there's a lot of people with draconian ideas about what is sin. But they aren't going to come in your house. And if you want to buy a gram of weed, they'll sell it to you. You know, and if you want to enjoy a sex act, you can purchase it freely, and they won't do anything to the people on either side of the transaction, like here. Your name isn't going to be published in the newspaper as a John. The prostitute isn't going to be arrested. They don't have to go in the alley. You know, it's all... So they're good that way. They might not like it. But they aren't going to jump in your shit. For some reason, these people here just... That's how they get... That's how they have their fun. It's by trying to keep you from having your fun. I don't know. How did they get that way? I don't get it. I never did get it.
C. O. M. M. U. N. Community. Frank, in the 70s, Frank lived on a commune, a community of like 500 people or something.
Oh, not that many.
Yeah, this was in Massachusetts. Oh, and there was like a leader. Mike was the leader.
Mike, you?
No, this other dude, Mike. And just recently, they had a reunion.
Oh, my goodness.
They
you
got
went?
A hold of people. No, we didn't go. But they got a hold of people via email. And so now there's this listserv where
virtual
all these people
are
kind of going at it again, really.
Well, good.
Yeah.
We did the same thing in Detroit with our, well, I started with an organization called the Detroit Artist Workshop. And 2 years ago, we realized that it was 40 years since 1964. And so we organized the 40th anniversary reunion. And all these characters got in touch with each other again, and we brought them to Detroit, and we made the city recognize us. We got proclamations from the mayor and the city council and the governor. After 40 years, they finally said that we did something good, you know.
Wow.
It was exhilarating. And then to be in touch with these people, and then they wanted to have meetings, though. And I had to say, well, you know, in the artist workshop, if you'll remember, we didn't have very many meetings.
Gee.
If you wanted to do a poetry reading, you could schedule a date, you know.
I, D, middle class, in, on me, right? That's the case with most of these people. Most of them are now middle class.
Yeah, or upper middle class is
S,
the case, maybe.
Yeah, H, O, shocked at what we do.
Oh, really?
I mean, just going to the website was like such a big brouhaha. They were talking forever about the pornography we're involved in. I mean, really, like blowing up. People were blowing up over it.
Sick, huh?
H A.
See, they hate pornography.
Harming people. They said that Frank was harming people by his art. And
this
his
is what
life.
Gets me.
He
here's
kept saying, how am I harming people? Give me a specific
here's
example.
Here's people
of
who
how.
Can sit, though, and watch their entertainment all involves harming people.
Right.
You ever notice that? Man, you turn on your TV for and you hear gunshots and sirens and they're beating somebody and in all the movies, if I see little glimpses in here and there, because I don't ever watch, but like I'm in a restaurant and I'm eating, they're showing a movie, and it's people never anybody fucking. That is the worst possible thing. And if your children ever saw somebody fucking or sucking somebody's genitals, it would just damage them for life. But they can sit there. But then sit there and watch people blow each other away for 8 hours a day. And that's good, clean family entertainment.
And
you know what I mean? What the fuck?
And
I don't get it.
And if
I only like to watch movies of people fucking, you know?
And if sex is S H A shallow. Well, yeah, shallow sex seems to be acceptable.
What does that mean? You just get the head in? What do you mean by shallow sex?
Well, where there's no...
You don't get all the way to the end?
There's no
know?
Intimacy. There's no intimacy.
Wait.
Is that what you mean?
You mean mental intimacy, they mean. You can't get any more intimate than being up inside somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah, is that what you mean, mental? Like, yeah, there's like a...
There's no love in it. There's no... You aren't going to have get married and have children as a result.
They...
And ruin their lives.
Don't. They don't get upset about that. That's been our experience. The people that get upset with what we're doing will accept the kind of sex that you'll see in a Hollywood movie.
Oh.
But they won't accept the kind of stuff that we're doing, even though maybe on some level it's not quite as explicit and it's not as, like, I don't know what. But there's something about it that they get freaked out about. And Frank has said that he thinks it's just the intimacy, the realness of it.
Yeah, the realness
real.
Of it. Yeah.
It's real. It's two people really being together, and that freaks them out. Whereas, like, the Hollywood version of all the, like, glamorous
stuff. It's so neurotic,
kind of stuff.
And there's always the reason for giving or withholding. And then there's
the
always the drive to create another dysfunctional family, you know. Because, I mean, what unit in our social order is more dysfunctional than a family? How many of us are there here? Six. I'll bet there's not one person in here that could give us a story of a happy family in every way, except maybe y'all. You know, I don't know, but I have a happy family, but I mean, I'm different. I didn't have a happy...
nuclear. Biological family.
No. Nobody does.
They don't R E A
realize
the N U nuclear family is a R E C E recent phenomenon, recent invention that don't work.
Yeah, recent invention.
Yeah.
Well, none of this shit works. You know what I mean? The vaunted white man that runs this shit. No one has ever been proved more incapable. None of their shit works. Why aren't, you know, I don't get it. Why do they keep getting the same people? You look in the, I get all my news from the newspaper. And you see these pictures day after day of the leaders of this ugly social order. They're all white men in suits, you know. Can anybody ever put together the fact that it's these people and this shit's fucked up? It's their fault? Duh! You know? It's like you're living on a planet of people that can't see anything that's right in front of them. I don't get it. But...
when you were in D, E, Detroit.
In the D.
I was in S, San Bernardino.
Ah. Yeah. San Berdu.
We there were A, about 440 are radicals?
40, yeah.
But the W H I, the white were S, the whites were STS.
Mm-hmm.
The blacks were Black Panthers.
Yeah. Might as well had some brown berets in there too. La Raza. Yeah, well, everything is small when it started.
Yes.
You know? I remember when I went to Detroit in 1964 from outlying areas in Michigan, small farm town where I grew up. And I knew that they had beatniks there, but I didn't know where to find them. And I went to graduate school at Wayne State. Finally, one day, they announced that at the Detroit Institute of Arts Museum, they were having a special program of 16 millimeter films. I was interested in anything out of the ordinary. But I went to this evening, and all of a sudden there was 200 beatniks. Bam, just like out of nowhere. Men with beards, women with net stockings and long straight hair. And these were those. And I said, this is it. You know, it really exists, the promised land, you know. But it was hard. I mean, when I started out, you'd be in a small city like Flint, Michigan, where I was an undergraduate, and there would be 10, 20 people in a city of 200,000, like you were saying.
Yes.
That had any kind of thoughts outside the mainstream, that weren't going to get a job in the factory, go in the army, or play football in college or something. There were very, very few. And then when you went somewhere else, you'd have to seek them out and try and find the secret place where they gathered. Of course, San Francisco and New York were beacons of otherness, you know? You knew if you could just get there, the shit was happening, you know?
Dreamed of being in San Francisco.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
I make pilgrimages to both, you know, but then you go back to Detroit and you'd say, man, we should try and do some of that stuff here, you know, because this is too jive. There's nothing here for us to do, you know. Nobody's going to give it to us. We got to figure out how to do it and make it for ourselves.
U-N-G, hungry.
Yeah, hungry.
Yeah.
It was Frank Zappa put it, hungry freaks, daddy. What is that? You know, where is it? We want something. What is it? We didn't even know what we wanted.
We F I finally F I N we find P L places like P H Phoenix. When we perform in places like Phoenix, you have people that are very hungry.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
they don't
they're
have
dying
many
for
things
it.
Around. So we perform there. It's like all of a sudden everybody's there and they're like, yeah.
Well, and besides what you guys do, it's like me, wherever I go, they like what I do, but they wouldn't have any idea of how to tell you what it was before they saw me.
Yeah. Right.
I heard this guy's a poet or something, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they don't even know what a poet is, really. Now they have spoken word, you know, so I'm priced right out of the market with just being a poet, you know? Who's looking for a poet? Well, I'm here anyway. Take it or leave it. And they dig it, but they didn't have any idea that what it would be like or that they would like it or anything. Are we live?
Yeah, you betcha.
Okay.
Every D, A, every day.
You betcha.
P E people. Oh, that's who would show up. Everyday people.
Everyday people, right. Just like Sly said.
Yeah. Not like the artsy fartsy. Like a lot of times when you perform in larger cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, you get like these artsy fartsy crowds, which Frank always says is the hardest audience because they got so many layers of glunk on top of them that they can't just like hang and feel what we're doing.
I don't see them very often.
Right.
Even when I go back to when I perform in Detroit, and I've kind of, since I left there 15 years ago, I've kind of, of course, when you aren't from there, you're more popular.
Right.
I've kind of built up a little audience, you know, but the people that I knew for 25 years when I lived there, and the poets, and all the people in the arts community that I was part of, they never come to mind, maybe one per show.
Right.
They never, people, of course, a lot of them are old now, and they just don't go out at night, you know. But
I am.
I'm not going to be that old.
L-A, glad, they, that, it, A.
You glad they stay home?
I ain't, J, you. Are you glad it ain't just you? Hearing you talk about it. It's the same exact thing that happens
with course.
Us. Yeah.
We're underground.
Right.
And they're dying for it.
I C L E, clear out whole cities. I mean, we performed in Toronto, and after the performance, it's like nobody shows up, right? This guy brought us there. Nobody shows up. He said afterwards, it was the talk of the town. Everybody's talking about the performance that people didn't go to.
Yeah.
So, and then he schedules Frank to do this 48-hour performance.
Ooh.
And he said, Frank, you are so powerful that you've cleared Toronto out of all the artists. Everybody left town for the weekend.
Wow. That is powerful.
Yeah.
That reminds me of my friend Kid Jordan, a great saxophonist from New Orleans, who's the outpost of avant-gardism there. And when he has a rare engagement, where he's hired with his improvisational arts ensemble to perform, the first thing they do is drive everyone out. The first number,
that's
and Kid isn't happy until all the squares have been driven out.
That's exactly what Frank
does. Then there's 10
that's
people
exactly
left and they're just
Frank
grooving
does.
Their nuts off, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. Frank uses boredom.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He does the first half hour was boring. And he tells people, he'll even say, I'm going to do it boring to clear out the room, and it still works.
Yeah.
People still leave. He said the good stuff is going to happen after most of the people leave, and they still leave. They just can't take it.
And, you know, so much of it, what they do now, they're so primed by the people who are selling their entertainment as to what to look for and what to watch for. And they have the preview in the Johnny Depp movie about the pirates comes from Disney. You will notice that first you get stories about the making of the movie and Johnny Depp and his swashbuckling outfit, and then when it's going to be released, and all the tie-ins and everything. And then the reviews, and then people write and come, well, I went last night to see this movie. I mean, they just... So they know that this is something, when they go to it, they're going to get their 950s worth or whatever it is because they told them they would, you know? It's also nuts.
In.
And the thing is, it has no respect for content because if they did the same thing for Frank Moore,
SEA,
he'd be huge.
T in Seattle. The. P. A. Paper. Oh, this was, Frank was, we were scheduled to perform at this kind of artsy bar, and the paper did like a big story, as if like Frank was this, you know, artsy fartsy darling. This.
And they
this
all
was
came?
During the Jesse Helms period when Frank was under investigation by Senator Jesse Helms. So that was like, you know, that was like a big draw. And so the place, bar was like packed with all these artsy fartsy kind of fall.
Because they'll do whatever they tell them to do.
And so it's like, I don't know, 3 hours. And it's just Frank sitting on the stage by himself singing along with taped music. And so the first like couple songs, everybody's like,
Then
it just keeps going. And it just keeps going.
What does he think we're
going
to do? What is he doing?
And he just cleared the room out, you know. And the people that run the bar were devastated.
Yeah.
And we told them before, we said, people always leave and it's okay.
Right.
It's okay. That doesn't mean it's a failure. And they still, they couldn't deal with
drinks
it.
Orders, you know. It's different for them when people leave them. They have no more
not
sales.
Beverages. Right. Right. There is
the reason you're there and never forget it is to sell beverages for them, you know.
Right.
That's what they're in business for, and we're just an unreasonable adjunct.
Oh.
We have to deal with these fucking artists.
Oh.
They always want so much. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
F. U. N. Fun.
Yeah, big fun. Well, we get the secret to a lot of things that people, you know, really would benefit from knowing about if they just, if there's just some way that we could show them, you know. This is what's fun, being creative and on top of things and making things happen that haven't happened before. That's what's fun to me. It's been fun all my adult life.
It is F U fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Fuel for more ideas and also for life itself, for more.
Why?
A greater life.
Why we eat don't be you. Are burnout. Why we don't burn out. Because we're always getting fueled by
renewed.
What we're doing. Yes. Yeah.
Burnout, yeah.
Well, that comes up with us, with people that we know who are in the arts or even in political stuff. They say they get burned out.
Very little rewards then, even if you win your office or whatever you're trying to win. Often it's a Pyrrhic victory because you don't get to do what you wanted to do. Because it's all set up against us, you know.
When Helms was investigating Frank, there were also 5 other artists he was investigating. And the other 5 artists all got burned out and wanted it to just go away. Whereas Frank just totally
welcomed
got into it.
Yeah, he had such a good time
for the years during that period.
Was that when they were after Karen Finley?
Yeah, exactly. It was Karen
My friend
and
Penny
Frank.
Arcade.
There's a picture of Frank and Karen. Right
I love
there.
Karen Finley.
Yeah.
Was Penny Arcade in that number? Do you know her?
She wasn't one of the people that was being investigated.
She's one of us, though. Uh-huh. She's a deeply subversive artist. Yeah, I love them. Karen Finley and the guy with the Piss Christ, too.
Right, right.
Boy, that was some ugly shit.
Yeah.
To persecute those people.
Yeah.
Reminds me when they made Baraka the poet laureate in New Jersey, and then they wanted to take it back. And they wanted him to give back the $10,000 award. He said, are you out of your goddamn mind? Maybe you should have read some of my poems before you made me the poet laureate. Because the ones they objected to were written, you know, 3 or 4 years before. They were on his website. Boy, oh boy. Huh.
They don't read.
No. No, reading or is dying art.
See? Oh, come to the performances
no.
either to check it out.
We don't even go out at night. Mm-hmm. Older people. Mm-hmm. And then the younger ones, they have to buy a babysitter. If they want to go out.
L.
They wouldn't think of bringing their kids.
I. N. Linda. Linda Burnham. What about the letter, that whole thing? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, she was the editor of a magazine, High Performance Magazine. This was like in the 80s, before we knew what we were doing was called performance art. But we had been doing it like 10 years.
We just didn't know it was called that.
And then Frank signed up to go to the Art Institute, really just to meet other artists because our group had just fallen apart and everything. And that's when we found out it was called performance art. And none of the students or the teachers would have anything to do with us because we were having too much fun.
Yeah.
We were happy. It was just a lot of angst and drinking
and not doing anything.
And
you know, it reminds me of in New Orleans, you know, where things are physically ruined, and then on top of that they have the ruination of the rich people who are trying to keep the colored people from coming back. It's really ugly shit that they got there. Oh, it makes me sick. Now it made me forget what I was talking about.
Let's see, I was talking about being at the Art Institute and that the students and teachers wouldn't talk to us because we were having too much fun and they were suffering.
Oh, this is okay.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a group called Common Ground. They're like hippies and people like us, and they feed the victims. They have a daily feed and all this. And a friend of mine, I was just down, a friend of mine was telling me how the government, like FEMA, they sent a team over to study them and their methods and what they were doing. And they said, well, how do you do this? And they said, well, we ascertain that people are hungry and then we get some food and we cook it up and then we feed them. And they said, no, no, it can't be, it's too easy. How do you know which ones to feed? They said, well, the ones that are hungry. And they just, it blew their minds, you know.
W, E, L, well.
Oops.
The, D, I, diggers. Did it.
Yeah. Sure did.
We.
Same concept.
Did. We did it.
Yep.
In Santa Fe.
Yep. And they said, well, how do you get the people? Well, they say you got to care about these people. You got to really feel bad that they're hungry. And you got to want to do something about it, you know? It's not like you got a job and how much am I going to get and all that. It's like these people are hungry and you feel bad for them and you want to feed them. Duh! You know, and they're going, whoa, 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 I don't know, I never heard of such a thing, you know? You mean you just feed them because they're hungry? What about the criteria?
They, Emma, A, make, A, K, L, a law against feeding hungry.
You saw that? The Las Vegas.
Yes.
Las Vegas, of all places.
San Francisco, they did it too.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised because San Francisco, well, I'm staying with Jim in the Mission District. And there's all these people there that just, they've drummed them out of society, but they're still there and they just, they're like ghosts. Because the white people just walk, they don't even look at them and they ask them for some money, they don't even look at them and they ignore them. And there they are. And they're just there all the time and they're fucked up, you know?
And
they don't care about them. Get out of my way.
A.
We'll have you arrested.
T. A R R, arrested, F, Food Not Bombs.
Yeah.
For feeding people.
Yeah. They hate that. Yeah. Well, it's the whole thing about giving them a dollar. Give the money to United Fund and we'll make sure that it's doled out to the right people. They don't get it. They don't have it. My daughter said to me not very long ago, said, they just don't understand what it means, poor people. They just don't understand. And they don't. They don't have any idea. Where they keep the poor people so segregated from the mainstream. There's no sitcoms about poor people and people in the ghetto and what they have to go through. I saw the other day for the first time a story about the poor people's tax. And you try and tell people about that, they don't have any idea what you're talking about. You know, they turn your phone off, so you gotta give them an extra $50. You can only buy $10 worth of minutes at a time instead of 100, so you only get 20 minutes instead of 1,000, you know, etc. Everything.
F-O-O, Food Not Bombs, no food.
You go buy your food from a party store for twice the cost of a supermarket, You can't get to the supermarket, you don't have a car, so you gotta pay a taxi $7 to drive you 3 blocks to the grocery store. Right. You know, so they said for a poor person it costs them twice as much as a middle class person, just for the necessities of life. And they already don't have any money. And they don't, but there's no reflection of this anywhere. There's no TV shows about it. There's no movies about romance among the crack whores, you know? You know, I mean, they got a rough life. That's a hell of a story. Some poor person on the street, they're strung out on drugs, trying to live in this cruel world. And that's just wrong. They just put that person in prison.
Except in H O horror movies. D C H U D no C H U S C H U D S
Chud God, that was the one with the
It was about homeless people. It was about homeless people.
They were like the heroes of the story.
They were the heroes.
Well, they might
have
one, you know. I mean, the other thing I see is, where is the movies or the shows about us? Where is somewhere you can go and see about the 60s? People getting high and taking acid in the park and listening to the Quicksilver Messenger Service or something. Just having a ball, you know? Nothing like that. They just erase the parts out and then...
D.
Remember in New Orleans when the people all of a sudden, here's all these black people in the Superdome, stranded.
A.
Where'd they come from?
Deballed. They deballed the 60s.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they erased it. And and drugs. We're getting high. They say drugs, I say getting high, you know. Because they're all on drugs anyway. The most profitable industry is the drug industry. The legitimate drug industry is the most profitable
My
of all.
Kid. This would have been like in the 80s. Koala, our kid, he was in high school, and he was going to do, they had to do a paper about drugs. And and he immediately thought that he was going to do about how bad drugs were. And Frank said, he suggested to him that he do some research on the 60s and all the positive experiences people had about drugs, making the point.
Not a popular paper, I'm sure.
Well, he couldn't find anything.
Wow, there you go.
Which was Frank's point. We just lost the mic, Mikey.
Sorry, Mike.
Which was Frank's point that they didn't want, Frank said they don't want you to know about the positive experience of having drugs, of getting high. And so when Koala went to the library and couldn't find anything about it, and then he started listening to what Frank was saying, he ended up writing a paper that was positive about LSD and drugs and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, really got everybody
that.
Like
yeah,
this.
They bring their bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And it's like drug tests. To have a job, you got to take a drug test. They don't want people smoking pot and going in there and thinking too much. It just is not in the program. They want you to do what they say and when they say it, and then you can resent it if you want.
Right.
You know, you can make jokes about how terrible your job and what you have to do. But as long as you go every day, you're all right, you know. I never could get that one either. Why would I go and do that? I don't get it. There's nowhere near as much fun as what I'm doing. Hey, we don't get to take a break, do we?
No, you're not the air, right? Usually. Okay. No.
Just checking. Just,
yeah. All right. Just yeah. One. What were you gonna say? We. Give people A L T alternatives.
Yeah. Yeah. And unhappily, this is the only place they're going to get them, too.
Right.
They're not going to get them as part of the menu from their computer. When you open your computer and they got all that horseshit on there about. Who's somebody's baby and whose engagement was millionaire news, you know?
Right.
It's not going to be in there. Tune in lover.com. You're not going to see that in that AOL open up page.
We have E R I Erica. What she does? Erica works at a retirement community in Oakland, a large retirement community, and she's the director of enrichment, which means that she just has a good time with the residents. And so she's bringing us into that environment, and Pete Frank says, be sexy.
Yeah, yeah,
be
yeah,
sexy,
yeah, yeah,
dress
yeah.
sexy.
Yeah, do it up.
Be sexy, and boy, everybody loves it. Everything's changing. The way the people, the heads of staff in the place are relating to each other completely differently now.
That's good.
People are enjoying each other more. Things are more open. It's changing everything.
That's good. Me, so I just fell in love with a 61-year-old woman.
You what?
I just fell in love with a 61-year-old woman. She said, I don't know we're supposed to be able to do this.
How?
Oh, yeah.
How?
I thought this was over,
old,
you know?
How old are you?
I'll be 65 on October 2nd, God willing, if I make it that long.
Frank just turned 60.
Yeah, congratulations. This is a fate I never anticipated. So what I like about it is it's all like free time. I just do whatever I want, and I don't do anything I don't want. And as long as I can get away with it, I'll be happy until they carry me away, you know. I'm on free time now. I don't even have any idea what the future is supposed to be like. You know, you live your conscious adult life, and
Did
you always get some idea what's supposed to come next, you know.
S-T. Start. When did your free time start?
Well, I've been on free time for a while. I can't rightly tell you when it started. But you mean this grace period? I don't know. I mean, I made 50 and I thought, 50? How the fuck did I get to be 50 years old, you know?
L.
And then a while went by and then I made 60.
I.
And it was just inconceivable.
Like, well, when you said that. We hadn't been together very long. We had only been together about 5 years or something. This is 1980, around 1980. Mm-hmm. Frank said, I feel like I could just die because life has been so full.
Right.
Well, I completely freaked out. I said, what are you talking about? Well, in my mind at that time, I didn't really get what he was saying.
You're a little younger also.
I was younger. and we had just gotten started. I thought,
you were having a
and
ball.
So I was going, okay, you got to give me your word. You're not going to die. But now I understand what he's saying. I feel that way.
Since I started, really.
Yeah.
Because the path I chose was one where people generally died young. All my heroes, at least half, let me put it that way. Because Allen Ginsberg lived to ripe old age, and Burroughs, and Dizzy Gillespie. But Charlie Parker died when he was 34. John Coltrane died when he was 40. Little Walter didn't make it past 38. You know what I mean? I just figured this came with it. Just like going to prison. I went to prison. It wasn't no shock to me. All the revolutionaries went to prison at some point. You know, Ho Chi Minh organized a religion from revolution from prison. So these things didn't ever. And I just said, well, you got to do what you're going to do. And then if you're gone, you're gone, you know. But it didn't make any difference. Once I, you know, in the 60s, when I took a lot of LSD, and my ego was just shattered and shrunk to the size of a little pea, and then I just didn't care after that what happened to me. It didn't make any difference. I was one with the universe. Whichever form of matter I was going to turn up on tomorrow, what was I going to do about it anyway but accept it? There wasn't nothing I could do about it, you know? It's bigger than me. So I was fortunate in that time where I realized that it wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. And ever since, so I was ready to go at any time. But then I got old. And then it was the 21st century. You know, it was like February 1999 before I ever conceived of the idea that I might live into the 21st century. You know, it just seemed inconceivable. It seemed like it was way in the future, and I would never be there to see it. Or to have a grandchild. I got a grandbaby, you know. I never thought I'd outlive my mother, and then my mother lived to be 88. You know what I mean? So, and I thought, my poor mom's going to have to bury me. And then I buried her. So that was mine by all this stuff. That happened in 2000, you know. And then I turned 60 in 2001. I just thought, man, I'm 60 years old. What the fuck? How did this happen? What did I do wrong?
Okay.
And now I love it.
Kept giving. Me, Jay, you, S, just 5 more years through your young life and young adulthood. They kept saying you only have 5 more years to live.
Oh, that.
His cerebral palsy thing. They,
5 years, huh? Boy, you multiplied that motherfucker.
And they're all dead, Frank.
Yeah,
said.
Exactly. Getting long gone. They died of hypertension and strokes and heart attacks.
A. If I.
Only 5 years, that's rich.
If I L. I. Listen to them. You would have, your life would have gone a whole different
direction. Yeah, good thing you
didn't
listen to him, huh?
Right. Never believed
another him. Object lesson why to never listen to him, you know? Yeah. Now I've got to where I just love being old. I'm so happy. I'm just happy to be here. I'm doing what I want to do, and I got one problem to solve. That's dinner. And that's it, though. And everything else is lovely in my life. I'm so productive, and I'm better than I've ever been at what I do. I write better, I perform better, I do better broadcasting. And I'm happy. And I hope I live a lot longer. Now I'm starting to do the things that I never did in life because I never figured it would make any sense because I wouldn't be here long enough to worry about my health.
Like what? Like what?
Well, exercising, losing weight, watching my diet, keeping my blood sugar under control for the first time, you know, stuff like that.
B.
And I enjoy these. These used to be things where I ain't got time to pay attention.
Be careful.
Give me some mashed potatoes and gravy, you know.
Be careful. They could kill you, all those things.
Yeah, I know. It's like jogging, you know. I used to say that. Mm-hmm. I haven't got that far. I said, if you ever see me running, you better stop and pick me up because somebody's after me. You know? It's not going to be a recreational issue. But I could do it now. I take long walks every day along the canals in Amsterdam. It's really lovely. I just get good and high, and I go for a nice long walk, and I have a lot of thoughts, and I go to a coffee shop and take out my laptop and start writing them down, you know? Well, man, I like it here on Earth for some reason. It's a tough sentence, but what the hell? As long as you keep your sense of humor.
Life is good. Life is F. U.
And.
Is full.
Full.
Oh, fun. Life is fun. Life is fun.
See, I got that right away. We share so much of the same outlook, Frank and I, I'm afraid. Yeah, you're right.
The P E the people in the C community want to P A I paint me as A B U abused victim.
Wow. Oh, they want to make you into a victim.
Right. That's the thing that Frank has been kind of talking with them about, I guess.
Well, I get the same thing on a little different level, but, you know, when I got out of prison in December, it'll be 35 years ago, I've lived an incredibly rich, full, and productive life and made a lot of things in a lot of different directions. But if you look it up, what they know me for is when I was a victim. I was in the prison, and John Lennon wrote a song for me, and that's what I'm known for. And, well, you know, I'll never be too grateful for this thing happening. It was the happiest thing that ever happened in my life because I got out of prison just like that 4 years early, you know. But, I mean, it didn't have anything to do with me or what I do. I'm known because I was a famous victim, you know. And you feel stupid because, really, I'm the last thing from a fucking victim, you know. I control my own destiny.
Right.
Much more so than even rich people.
Right.
I'm much happier and much more comfortable here on Earth. And, you know, when I learned that rich people had problems, that was kind of the last straw, you know. Well, Jesus, well, if you don't get all that money and then not have any problems, well, what's it good for? Why do they go through all that shit to get it? If they got perfect happiness, I can understand it, you know. But they're as miserable as the poor people in the ghetto. Actually, they're probably not as miserable because they know how to have fun without any money. Because if they don't have any fun because they don't have any money.
When I P A panhandled. It was the poor people
who gave
the most.
Absolutely.
Rich people would walk right by.
Oh, yeah, and sneer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then call the police.
Yeah. To or.
And they really hate what they hate the
pennies,
worst.
Pennies. Or the rich people would give pennies.
Yeah, pennies and sneer.
The poor people have no money and they would give like what they
dollars.
Had. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'd be proud of my daughter, my older daughter, when I go somewhere with her, like in downtown or something, and somebody asks for some money. My daughter lives in the ghetto, and she's a single mother, and she doesn't have shit. She'd give them a dollar. I'd be so proud of her, you know. Because man, if you can't give something to the poor people that have less than you, what kind of human are you? You're just not a very admirable human being. Mm. If you got more than somebody else, Jesus, give them something. It's rough, man. Like my daughter, my other daughter said, they just don't understand. They don't understand what it's like not to have any money. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to their house and they've got enough groceries for 10 people for 6 months. And you go to a poor person's house and they don't know how they're going to get to the next supplementary check to put some bags of flour and, you know, some milk in the refrigerator for their kids and stuff. Yeah, it's just so disgusting, this world. But you have to tell, you have to talk about it. You know, I do what I do for kicks. I mean, I write poetry and I perform and I play with musicians. This is what I do for my fun. But I've kind of, in the recent years, I've started to take on more and realize that it's a mission. That these people really need, it isn't just me getting off, but I mean, these people really need this shit.
Right.
When I go and talk to them about John Coltrane or Muddy Waters or Miles Davis, they've never heard of them before.
Wow.
And I think, man, what a void these people have in their lives if they don't know about any of the good shit. I've never heard of Diego Rivera, you know, or Van Cole or somebody. Wow, man. And it's up to us to tell them. I feel that more every year now. And that's not ignoble. That just adds to the fun. Turning them on to good shit that they didn't know about, that's fun.
Like? Even we did not know about P.A. Paul Robeson. This was like 10 years ago or something. And we thought, how could we not know who Paul Robeson is?
Well, they
Robeson
got it all
is?
Locked out.
Right, right.
Really, right. When you start thinking about it, it makes you sick right down to your bones. It does me, because they just got it locked. Not only do they have us locked out so that we have to struggle to make a living, whereas what we do should be rewarded at least with dinner and a place to stay. No, seriously, though. I give a lot, and all I want is dinner, you know, and a place to sleep and a joint, you know, and a glass of sparkling water and a cup of coffee. I don't want very much. But I think I should get it at my advanced age. I think this is my right, really, as an old person. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I lose my train of thought.
Vote for Frank Moore.
Vote for Frank Moore.
Frank's
he has my vote.
Everybody gets a minimum wage.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a minimum wage.
Yeah,
oh, read the
idea.
Platform. I guess I have to just read
platform.
It from online. Okay. I'll read you the platform.
Okay.
Let's see. It's where are we,
top
Mikey?
Right.
Up top. All right. All right. I'll do away with welfare and Social Security. Instead, every American will receive a minimum income of $1,000 a month. The amount will be tied to the cost of living and will not be taxable. We will have universal prenatal to the grave health care and universal free education with equal access.
Amen. Just like Cuba.
I'll do away with all tax deductions for over $12,000 income. Instead, there will be a flat tax. There will be a flat tax of 10% on annual income of less than $1 million for an individual and less than $5 million for a corporation. But the flat tax will jump to 75% on annual income exceeding these
Amen.
Limits.
Here.
I'll cut the military budget by at least half. Public mass transit will be free, 24/7, and reliable.
Yeah.
All patents.
What a platform!
All patents and copyrights will expire in 20 years. Inventions, products, etc., which are developed with governmental money and/or public institutions, cannot be patented.
Yeah, you're right.
All businesses selling their products in the United States will have to certify that their products were manufactured in accordance with this country's labor, wage, environmental, and safety laws, that they meet or exceed these, no matter where they were produced. Each city and each media market will have at least two public access channels on radio, broadcast television, cable, and satellite.
Amen.
Election day will be a paid holiday.
Yeah, you're right. He's got my vote, Frank Moore. Reminds me of my pal Sergio Mayora ran for mayor of Chicago, and his first plank in his platform was, I am not a lawyer. And then he went on in much the same vein. He thought that was a big selling point for his candidacy. I am not a lawyer.
Jay, at Jay, you, S, just, M, A, make, oh, it's the Just Make Sense party.
Yeah.
He's running on the Just Make, it just makes sense.
JMS. Just makes sense to vote for Frank Moore. Well, anybody in their right mind is going to vote for Frank Moore. The rest of them must be crazy.
I get.
Results.
You can
get
slogan.
A handsome coffee cup. My model mind.
I get results.
Can we get a camera on this?
Yeah. Frank Moore for president. Vote now, vote often.
I am not Jay, just a
candidate.
Pretty face. I am not just a pretty mug.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm not just a pretty mug.
Yeah, I have a pretty mind also. Not just another pretty face.
Our lover clock. 10 o'clock.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Yeah, man, this is fun, man. I have to make this an annual thing, as we have. See, in New Orleans, if, like last year, I was here and I ended up on the show as a miracle from God, and then this year we hooked up, well, in New Orleans, in fact, you did this last year and this year at the same time, you have to do it every year. They create these traditions all the time. People get together and have crawfish on June 14th.
Yes.
This year, and then next year they have it, and then they have to have it every year on June 14th. I like that.
Okay. Jay?
A remarkable continuity in life that way.
Jack Hirschman? We're getting a little routine going with him, too. Because he
Hirschman.
Was on last year around this time, and now he's going to be on.
Well, please give him my highest regards.
Yeah.
I got to hang out with him when he came to Detroit once several years ago.
Him and his
a
wife.
A great American. That's what we should say on this. Frank Moore, a great American.
Can we quote you on that?
Vote soon, vote often, as they say in Chicago.
So John can be heard every week on lover.com. Mikey?
Oh, I'm on your show, on
you're
your station.
On, you're, we play your radio show.
All right, then.
On Lover
now
every
you're talking.
Week.
Talking.
Mikey
you.
Gets it off of the internet.
Yeah. That's the idea.
Mikey's on the schedule to see when you're on Lover.
It's on Wednesday nights at 8:30 p.m.
Pacific time.
All right.
Wednesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Pacific
time. We're
going to
make a network of this stuff.
That's what we're doing. Yeah.
They play me four times a week in Ann Arbor, where I used to live.
Wowee.
A3 Radio. They have a 24-hour internet radio station with offices and an old radio station. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing it to death.
Yeah. So, okay. All right, say goodbye to everybody.
Nice seeing y'all, Berkeley.
See you next year.
Yeah, see you next time.
All right, signing off.